President Zimmer, Provost Rosenbaum, trustees, deans, and members of the faculty, graduates, family, and friends, it is a truly great honor for me to address you today. My academic work bears on the study of literature and thought, with special emphasis on the German tradition. Today, I want to talk to you about what is unquestionably the greatest work to have emerged from that tradition, the two-part tragedy Faust by Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. In 1910, the Hispanic-American philosopher George Santayana wrote that Goethe's Faust is one of the three major philosophical poems in European literary history. While Lucretius's De Rerum Natura unfolds the ancient vision of atomism, and Dante's Divine Comedy, the Christian vision of the soul's ascent toward God, Goethe's Faust gives us the most complete poetic account of human life as historical self-fashioning. So that you can orient yourself historically, I will simply mention that Goethe worked on his Faust poem off and on for some 60 years, starting around 1773, when he was 24 years old. The first lesson Faust offers us then might be formulated this way: keep at it, genuine masterpieces usually take a lifetime. The completed part one of the poem, which will be at the center of my talk, appeared in 1808. The Holy Roman Empire, which had organized political life in Central Europe for more than 1,000 years, had just come to a crashing end. Goethe was able to witness the decisive battle, Napoleon's defeat of the Prussians at the Battle of Jena, from his upstairs window. The reason I believe Faust makes an appropriate topic for a convocation address is that it raises a question central for us as an academic community. The University of Chicago is a community that finds its meaning, that has its idea, with a capital I, in the search for truth. It's not that we are a community, one incidental activity of which is the search for truth, but rather that the search for truth is what binds us together, gives us our orientation in the world. It is a source of pride throughout the university, among students, faculty, and administrators, that we cleave to this idea in a uniquely fierce way. Let me try to bring out what I am calling the idea of our community with a thought experiment invented by the great writer of the German Enlightenment, Gotthold Ephraim Lessing. Maybe some of you have come across the statue of Lessing while biking through Washington Park. He deserves that statue and deserves to be remembered at this university. Lessing was the greatest theologian, dramatist, and critic of his day. His play, Nathan the Wise, is perhaps the most profound exploration of the notion of religious tolerance in world literature. In the thought experiment I want to call to your attention, Lessing writes, Suppose that God came to you and held out his two hands and said, in this hand, my right one, is the truth, and in this hand, my left, is the unending search for truth, a search, however, that will for all eternity include an element of error. Which would you choose? Without hesitation, Lessing answers, in all humility, I would take his left hand and say, Father, give me this, pure truth is for you alone. The salutary effect of thought experiments is that they bring to the bright light of self-awareness important aspects of the commitments and values we hold. They show us something about how our concepts work, and therefore something about ourselves. We intuitively understand Lessing's choice of the left hand. That choice makes salient the fact that the very notion of truth loses its meaning if it is not tied to human endeavor. Part of what it means to be human is to be a truth searcher. To give up that search would be to give up an essential aspect of our identity. But Lessing's exercise in self-reflection also tells us that the results of our inquiry will never be perfect, and that in taking on the quest for truth, we are accepting consequences of such fallibility. That's the way Lessing saw it in 1777. The earliest drafts for Goethe's Faust were sketched about 4 years before Lessing published his thought experiment, but I want to take 1808, as mentioned above, the year that Faust Part I was published, as my point of reference here, and this for a particular reason. For this is exactly the time when Wilhelm von Humboldt, the Prussian diplomat and scholar, was preparing his thoughts on how to institute a modern university. 2 years later, he would complete the memorandum that served as the blueprint for the founding of the University of Berlin. You probably think I'm throwing a lot of very forgettable dates at you, but the story I'm unfolding is of pressing relevance to us as we are gathered here today. To put the matter in a nutshell, Humboldt's model of an independent research university in which students are educated to think freely and critically provided the paradigm according to which the University of Chicago shaped itself during its formative years. In the very first convocation address held at this university 120 years ago, the historian Hermann Eduard von Holst vigorously advocated Humboldt's ideal, and in his 500th convocation address delivered just 4 years ago, President Zimmer reaffirmed the university's commitment to the Humboldtian concept of critical inquiry as the aim of higher education. The immediate connection between this story and my topic today lies in the fact that Humboldt and Goethe were close friends. They were in regular correspondence. Humboldt was a great admirer of Goethe's, and Goethe shared with Humboldt his poetic and scientific manuscripts before they were published. Goethe, in addition to being a poet and public official, was a scientist of incomparable range and productivity. I can only mention here his discovery of the intermaxillary bone in the human being, his pioneering work on the morphology of plants, and his controversial theory of colors. Humboldt, too, was a distinguished scholar, especially known for his theoretical work in linguistics. But Goethe's and Humboldt's achievements were intertwined. Indeed, I am convinced that Humboldt's concept of the inner form of language is deeply imbued with Goethe's morphological theory. On the other hand, one of the privileges of Humboldt's friendship with Goethe, as we know from their correspondence, was that he was able to follow Goethe's progress on Faust firsthand. In fact, Humboldt was probably the critic whom Goethe most respected and whose opinions, therefore, he allowed to affect the course of his various scientific and poetic projects. This gives you an idea of the intellectual ferment out of which both Goethe's Faust and Humboldt's concept of the independent research university emerged. One of the topics of my research at Chicago has been to trace out these lines of influence and to excavate the conceptual foundations of such cooperative endeavors. Given the context I have sketched here, it might seem something of a mystery that Goethe begins his Faust tragedy by having his hero, the most learned scholar of his day, soundly reject university study. Here are the opening lines of Goethe's play in my own translation. Faust, opening monologue. So now I've studied philosophy, the legal art, medicine too, and damn it, even theology, crammed for sweaty hours on end. Yet here I am, a wretched fool, no wiser than at the start, got a master's now, a doctorate too, and for the past 10 years I've led my students around their empty heads and dragged them by the nose. For what? So-called knowledge is a joke. It all just tears my heart apart. The voice that comes to expression in these lines is a voice of despair at learning. And it is out of this despair that the protagonist, Faust, will make his infamous pact with the devil. The question I want to ask is, what is the ground of this Faustian despair, and what is its relationship to the life of learning? The first point I want to make is that we can hear in Faust's lament the deep dissatisfaction with the inherited order of the university at the time Goethe was writing the poem. Indeed, when Faust says that he studied philosophy, law, medicine, and theology, he is referring to the four divisions of the European university that emerged out of late medieval Europe. The philosophical faculty was charged with instruction in the so-called propedeutic subjects of grammar, logic, rhetoric. Law and medicine were the two secular professions for which university preparation was useful, and theology, the queen of the sciences, was regarded as supreme. This was essentially the way things looked when Goethe went to Leipzig to study law in 1769. And this was the structure keyed to the transmission of authoritative knowledge and to the preparation of students for specific secular or church-affiliated offices that Humboldt's conception of 1810 would overthrow. Faust's despair, then, bespeaks the crying need for the university reform that would soon follow. But there is another issue that Faust's monologue brings to expression. By highlighting the despair of his protagonist, Goethe brings out the fact that a special kind of despair is intrinsic to the search for knowledge. We may say that this form of despair emerges at moments of epistemological crisis. Such moments come about when not just this or that piece of presumed knowledge is called into question, but rather when the very schemata that organize our knowing are shaken. Not only do such schemata provide us with the prescriptive frames within which our interpretations are articulated, they are also constitutive of who we are as knowledge bearers. This is an insight that was first brought to awareness by Goethe and his philosophical contemporaries, Herder and Hegel. The basic thought is that human beings derive their sense of identity from their self-interpretations, that self-conceptions are very much dependent on sustaining structures of meaning. When our schemata are shaken, we are shaken with them. For this reason, Hegel called the process of knowledge change the path of despair. And for this reason, Goethe opens his play with a Faust whose heart is torn apart by the fact that the schemata within which he had found his self-conception have lost all force of conviction. If we now loop back from Goethe's dramatization of epistemological crisis and despair in Faust to the works of Goethe's contemporaries I mentioned above, then we see something quite important, although seldom acknowledged. We see that Lessing's vision of the search for truth and Humboldt's vision of a university of free and open inquiry render epistemological crisis unavoidable. They are programs for the experience of a despair that can be very far-reaching indeed. This has bearing on our community, which is constituted and constantly reconstitutes itself as a community in search of truth. Let me put the matter this way. As we honor today the completion of your course of study, it is my fervent hope that, in looking back on your time at the University of Chicago, you will all recall moments of epistemological crisis, that you will all have felt a tinge of Faust's despair. If your schemata of self-interpretation have not been called into question, then something has gone wrong. And I say this not as a neutral observer, but as someone who, during the 12 years he has spent at this institution, has seen some of his most deep-seated conceptions called into question. It is, if you think about it, a strange sort of institution that functions by creating the conditions for epistemological crisis among its participants. Perhaps the university is not the only institution of this sort. Perhaps modernity has produced several of them. The figure of Faust in Goethe's poem is often taken by interpreters to embody essential features of the modern world, and this is why the poem, with its crises, can tell us something about our own lives. But Faust is a romantic hero, and romantic heroes characteristically go it alone. That's what makes their despair so all-consuming. We, on the other hand, are not romantic heroes because we have community. And it is, in my view, the communal nature of our enterprise that enables us to meet the challenge of Faustian despair. Ask yourself how an epistemological crisis might be resolved. A plausible answer, one that is elaborated in Goethe's and Hegel's thought, is that resolution occurs through the construction of a narrative that enables the person in the grip of that crisis to grasp how she could have held those beliefs that have now been shaken. The earlier framework is brought into a more encompassing understanding where it is self-consciously attended to as a stage that has been overcome. My sense of the matter is that this is the work of community. Part of the tragedy of Faust in Goethe's poem is that he must suffer through his epistemological crisis alone. Indeed, his crucial mistake may be that he conceives the entire process of inquiry as solely his. But Goethe's and Humboldt's experience taught them that knowledge is a communal enterprise, and that it is the epistemological community that weaves and reweaves the narrative that brings epistemological crises to their resolution. A component of that resolution is the awareness that knowledge structures are fragile, and that the new forms of understanding we have achieved will themselves be called into question. Such consciousness is what it feels like to take God's left hand. My wish for you today is for a little despair and for lots of community. Congratulations on your academic achievements.